Okay, so let's get rolling here.
I don't mind setting the stage for you, if that makes sense.
That's good.
So two items on the agenda, pretty light but important. The second item being a commission roundtable opportunity for the three of you to just put whatever's on your minds on the table for discussion. The first item, though, is really follow-up from the last couple meetings now, and that's recognizing that the port has, after hearing from the county commissioners, the port kind of pulled back from seeking the ADO designation, so the county is moving forward with a pre-designation agreement with EDC Team Jefferson. At the same time, discussions have started around a multi-party, five-party agreement between the county, city, port, PUD, and EDC Team Jefferson for funding their efforts for the upcoming biennium. But what you've got in the packet is the county's white paper, updated from the last time you saw it, which I think was in relation to our feedback on that, as well as other entities' feedback. What I'm hoping to get from you today is really just some discussion and some notes on what specific deliverables or objectives you would want in that five-party agreement as it relates to the port's investment in EDC Team Jefferson and this partnership going forward. So no specific action, but really just looking for some guideposts as we move forward. Again, recognizing that the collaborative, the ICG, the Intergovernmental Collaborative Group, is going to be working on a framework, and that framework is very likely going to inform and or change some of the objectives of EDC Team Jefferson kind of in the second half of the biennium, or even the second three quarters of the biennium. So we need to get it started, but also recognize that there needs to be some flexibility to shift once we know more and the group has had a chance to work. So
Aaron, I've got a question. I sent you that email.
Yeah.
And how relevant should I go through the comments I made in that email to start the discussion?
Well, at any time. I mean, you got pretty granular in terms of board composition and structure. And
right.
I'd be curious to hear that. Yeah, this would be the time if we want to inform some of those discussions. This would be the time to do that. So yes.
Well, I'll be quick and succinct. They had the paper I saw that Aaron had sent us was kind of that proposal from Team Jefferson about how it will look going into the future. And what I noticed first and foremost in their priorities, they had like five bullet points. Nothing really was concise in terms of how to promote Jefferson County has an economic place to consider if you are moving a business here in terms of housing, employment, why is this a good place? Any of that, none of that existed in their priority list. And in terms of funding, looking at funding, the only thing they mentioned, and it was actually fourth on their bullet point, was the Lion Group, which I thought was quite short-sighted given that the port is sitting with a lot of tools in their bag. And I mentioned the USDA grants and loan program that is fairly widespread across the country and fairly proactive. And then I also talked about, they had proposed a board of 12 business leaders, I believe, or 8 business leaders. Which was it, Aaron? 8 or 12? I forget.
Well, I think it's a board with 12, three of whom would be, four of whom would be representatives.
Right.
City, county, port, and PUD. So eight business leaders.
And a couple problems with a board of 12. One is it's unruly. It's hard to get a consensus on an opinion. And two is it leads to split votes because you can easily have a 6-6 vote on an even number. So I proposed a board of 3 business leaders, one from each district of the county, and then the 4 representatives from the 4 bodies. And that's a board that's much smaller and can get opinions consensus and will never end up with a split vote. And finally, I actually questioned the reason for the PSC board to oversee the executive director and what they were doing. And it almost looked like, you know, because we're not sure who we're going to have running the EDC, now we need a second board to oversee that person. And it really kind of seemed to me to be redundant. That's the purpose of the main board, is to oversee the director, just like we as commissioners oversee Aaron. And so, yeah, it was a little bit granular, but at the same time, I, to be honest, was disappointed with the proposal overall. It seemed like kind of a rehash of, you know, yeah, we're going to put a lot of energy into business retention and trying to keep small businesses their doors open. But, you know, I guess I'm thinking in a much bigger format as far as economic development and how are we really going to get people to work? How are we really going to increase housing, pay for infrastructure, things like that? And, you know, just spending a lot of time and effort to trying to teach people how to do a business plan so they can keep their doors open does not seem like one of the top priorities that I would be inclined to go with in terms of supporting the EDC. And that was it.
Yeah, three business people seems a little thin to me. Maybe five. Would that be more rational? I mean, three is like, so you have hotel and restaurant, marine trades, and one to cover everybody else. Seems a little thin. I mean, I would like it to be, you know, more diverse than that. I mean, I would think financial would be in there. You know, technology maybe would be in there. So I'm thinking more like five, still to keep your, you know, your odd numbered, outcomes, operational. But three just seems a little thin.
Okay.
Did everybody get a call from their board of county commissioner counterpart? I talked to Heidi, what was it, over the weekend, I think, or Friday.
Oh, I didn't. Bill, I did listen to the Board of County Commissioners meeting on Monday, and a comment that was made was, Bill Putney has a long list of things. So were you going to share that list today, Bill?
I can. I mean, my long list is not that long. I mean, I think that, you know, one person doing the work is not enough. I can't imagine that if we're going to expand the horizon beyond, you know, the end of Sims Way, we need to have more than one person focused on it. You know, which means probably more, either one of two ways. So either we say, okay, everybody's going to chip in a bunch of money, or, you know, the other thing that I proposed is that each organization have a person whose business card has something on it that reads economic development. And I guess I leave that to the individual organizations about, you know, is that an additional business card for somebody they already have, you know, or just what it is in terms of, you know, the percentage of time that person is involved. But I really like to see us more directly involved. I'd like to see the four agencies more directly involved than just, you know, something like a commissioner assignment. You know, some commission assignments, I'm sure we each do some commission assignments with a lot of gusto and some not so much. And, you know, at least for the port, you know, we're part-timers. You know, we have other things on our plate besides, just going to, commission assignments all the time. And I just think it needs more attention. And, you know, it is, I think it's great that everybody's, all the agencies want to have their hand in. I think it's important. I think it moves the ball forward, but it is the port's primary responsibility to do economic development in the district.
Can I jump in real quick?
Otis is on us. Sure. I'm about done.
Just with a comment. And that is, as I read, the EDC's proposal, it really occurred to me that I agree with Bill that it is underfunded. And, you know, I think we're really, to be honest, I think we're wasting our money, and I think we will be frustrated to be involved with the EDC as it's currently framed. There's nothing wrong with what it's doing. And, you know, it can on a fairly, small level affect businesses and help businesses continue on. But I think for what we can do at the port, I would almost propose, and I am proposing this, I'm kind of throwing it out to the two of you, that we go on our own. I mean, we have got the capabilities and the tools and the funding to do something more concise and I think productive and proactive in the community than what EDC is going to do. And it isn't the end of the world that we aren't all holding hands together and marching in unison on some particular topic. So, you know, I don't want to get into the situation where Brian is showing up every year to kind of talk to us about what he's doing. And it's a lot about nothing, to be honest. And, you know, then what, you know, what have we accomplished with all of the discussion that we've had here over the last couple months about the EDC? So, I would just, I guess, say if, unless we're really sure that we want to go down hand in hand with everybody else, the way they're trying to formulate this, you know, there's no reason we can't do our own economic development.
Yeah, I think we're on the hook for that anyway, but, you know, I wonder, I mean, one thought is that, you know, we'll have some space upstairs in the Skookum building. One thought is that our in-kind contribution to EDC Team Jefferson is to give them, meeting room, availability and office space in the Skookum building. And, if, you know, if the port has an economic development officer, you know, job title somewhere, that job title lives in the Skookum building next to the EDC Team Jefferson offices, so that at least someone coming in from, you know, out of town looking for the economic development office gets on the same hallway with both the port and the EDC.
In my turn.
Yeah, your turn, Pam. Sorry.
Absolutely.
Excellent ideas, Pete. Really appreciate you, you know, suggesting to go out on our own. And I think ultimately, I'd like to work towards that too. I think that in the interim, well, I'm pretty excited about all hands on deck trying to create a community, a countywide effort towards this. I am seeing a lot of excitement with many, many organizations, and there's so many experts out there in our community. And ultimately, if we had a spokesperson for all of these experts in our community and a direction, I think that, you know, I'd like to work towards that. But overall, in general, let's see. I've had a lot of fun talking to staff, talking to Aaron, talking to Eric. I have talked to other EDCs. I've talked to other port commissioners. I've talked to constituents, businesses. And so I'm going to try to bring all those thoughts into our talk today. And I can give you my final bullet points first, or I can go through the,
go through it. Let's hear it.
Okay. So thinking kind of at the high level, maybe five bullet points about, you know, port funding, limiting it, if, you know, and thinking about, if we're going to fund the EDC, limiting it to $30,000 per annum, but we need to budget that. That's not in the 2021 budget. I think that over the next 6 months, that can be developed and applied to our 2022 budget, and it can be maybe a combination of in-kind. I think that the Team Jefferson needs to fulfill a scope of services that we direct specifically for the port that's tied to our mission and our strategic plan. I would like to see the EDC provide quarterly in-person reports, and detailing the work, not just a few numbers scattered on a page. I want to look at the board composition, like Bill and Pete have pointed out. The board composition is really critical, it does need to be modified to create a geographical representation. And it can also, Pete, I liked your idea about a small board, and Bill, your idea about bringing in other sectors. And why not have it more of a rotating board where we're not stuck for 2 or 3 or 5 years with one sector, one person, but we can have, if we've got 12 different business sectors, we can have them rotating through so we can keep the ideas, and somebody needs to be the keeper of the ideas. So that goes back to having a really good director. And I like the idea of being able for our electeds to be able to sit in on board meetings, but not necessarily be committed to another assignment. And I like the idea of the governing bodies, you know, all of us helping direct the EDC, and I'm kind of looking at this as a two-year, this is a biennium thing, a two-year experiment. If we all are working towards this, can we get to where we want to go? And if we can't, then yes. I believe in parallel, Pete, we should be thinking about how the port can just do this on their own. I mean, we can do it regardless, but in, you know, whether Team Jefferson works out or not, in parallel, let's figure this out for the port. So those are kind of my high level things. I had a fun conversation with Betsy Davis, and also with San Juan County EDC Director Victoria Compton, and also spoke with a couple of different port commissioners to get an idea about, well, something I've been wanting to find for a long time is a EDC that is working really well. And I was talking to a port commissioner recently, and she said, "I love our EDC." And I said, "Tell me about it."
He must have been talking to somebody from Port Angeles.
No, I actually was talking to the Port of Friday Harbor. And then she told me why she said we have a great relationship. They're doing awesome things. So then I had the opportunity to talk to the San Juan EDC director, Victoria. And I want to share with you some of the things that she said, because we've had such a challenging experience here, and it was really refreshing to hear someone that was so enthusiastic about. Number one, the first thing she said is, you fight harder for the place you live. She's hyper-focused on her community, because she loves her community. And so she thought that having a passion for the community that you live in is a high up there on the list. We talked about staffing, and they have a director. She spends about a quarter of her time reporting. She also does grant writing. She teaches business classes, business counseling, does presentations, and creates that team representing all the other organizations. Then she has a staff person full time, and they are focused on they're a trades educational professional, because there are no trade schools in San Juan County. So that is where we're really lucky. We have trade schools. So, but we need, anyway, she also has a half-time assistant for admin and business counseling, because this person that does it half-time also has their own business. So they're a value to consulting. And she talked about health benefits, that when you have funding for health benefits, it will attract quality people. Now their total funding outside of the $50,000 that the Washington Department of Commerce gives to each ADO is just a little bit more than ours. And they've got 2.5 people. It's for those 2.5 people, it's just $71,000 more than our current funding. That's for a position and a half more. And I feel like we don't need that trades professional, because we've got that going here. If we just funded another half-time person, that could make a huge difference. And I heard Kate Dean talk about that in the county commissioner meeting on Monday, saying that having a half-time person is really valuable. I heard Victoria Compton, EDC director, say that too. Another thing she said is prioritize and narrow your list to what you can do well. Like, just pick, like when Jim came back to the port and as director, just started with small wins. So pick something that you can do good at, win at it, and then build, instead of trying to scatter so far and wide that nothing is effective. And that's what I saw on Brian's list when he came and showed it to us in November. He was doing going to a million different meetings, but what were the results? We didn't see any. She also said that having term limits for board members were a critical thing, beneficial to keep, and so keep rotating them in, rotating them out. She also thought it was an audit requirement that you can't just be on the board forever. Oh, this was super. Regarding representing our whole county, because San Juan County is basically three islands, so comparing the three islands to our county's three districts, how do you represent all of those? Well, you don't sit in Port Townsend 100% of your time. So, and I've heard this from more than just Victoria. You know, I've heard this from constituents. Have your office located outside of Port Townsend. So what if?
So where is her office? Is it in Friday Harbor? Or is it?
Yes, you have down three offices? Friday
Harbor. Yeah, I didn't ask her. But yeah. What if you? What if you spent a week at the Tri Community Center? What if you spent a week at the Quilcene Community Center? What if you spent a week in Port Townsend, and then a floater week or something? But to have your headquarters in one place doesn't get you face to face and easily accessible and seeing the daily life in the other parts of our county. And I would like to suggest that we try that. All you need is a laptop, a computer, and, you know, messaging to the community.
And a network.
Yeah. Yeah. Create your network. It's huge. Just for us as a Port Commission, thinking about, you know, we've got property in Quilcene. We've got property, you know, we've got these different boat ramps all over the place. We've got Point Hudson. Well, you can sit there and talk about it, but when you go there, you get the feel and the connection that helps you make better decisions. Let's see. Oh, and then her final words were invitation to collaborate with San Juan County. She, there's so many similarities, and one of the strengths, one of her strengths is reaching out and working with other counties. For example, they put together like a four county EDA, Economic Development
Association.
Grant. So she's happy to share. She's happy to come and talk to our commission. She's happy to work with our EDC. She's happy to step in, she said, if we needed, if there was a glitch and we didn't have an EDC or something. So
did you get a chance to talk to anybody from Orcas Island to see how well their EDC is working for them?
Oh, well, our closest friend, a fishing partner, lives on Orcas Island. I will talk to him. I haven't asked him specifically that, but he's lived on Orcas Island all his life. And yeah, okay. But good question. So my bullet points, though, would be our priorities. After talking to a lot of different people, would be to have office space, try that office space rotating in three districts. Take planning and vision from all four of our intergovernmental groups and all the expert organizations. And build upon what one person can do or one and a half people can do, for the next 6 months, and plan some funding. But I feel like, we as a port, and the city and the PUD, we need to put this into planning for our 2022 budget. Some specifics of what I would like the EDC to do for our port in our community county is three things. One is housing, focus on who lives here, who works here, work with our realtors to build a portfolio of people who need housing. Everyone from port directors to trade. Actually, Betsy said that a lot of students they're finding that housing is not such an obstacle because a lot of their students live here. There's a lot of people who already live here. So when we talk about affordable housing, how can we get the people who live here and who have jobs here into the type of housing that they need? And that's all levels of housing. That's our port directors. That's our chief of police who needs a house. That's our hospital workers, our teachers. That's our businesses in the boatyard expanding. That's our farmers. So I think that would be a good focus. I wonder if Brian or the EDC can articulate how they could do that.
Is that a focus for the, I recognize that affordable or living wage housing is a gating item to economic development, but I question whether or not the ADO is the ideal agency to press for it.
Right.
I don't see it as Economic Development Council is not, it's not there to develop housing.
Well,
that's the purview.
Every single time I am talking to businesses and groups, the underlying elephant in the room is housing. And
sure.
Feeling like housing is blocking so much.
That's a county function.
Yeah, county. We've got organizations who are doing a really good job at tapping into, that are experts at this. Jefferson Community Foundation. My number two thing that I would like to see our EDC do, especially in looking at what San Juan County is doing, looking at our boat school, looking at the people, keeping the people who live here working here, is education funding. So funding the people who live here to be able to get the education that they need to better their, to better their skills, whether that's college, whether that's the boat school, whether that's the Northwest Maritime Center, okay. And my third thing, and I know this is kind of strange, but we have a huge parking issue. And I feel like if we had more room in our boatyard, we have parking problems at Boat Haven. We have parking problems in Point Hudson. There's parking problems downtown. We've got a park and ride that sits empty. So we've got 17,000 cars coming into Port Townsend every day. We've got stormwater issues.
We don't have a transit authority. Is that the reason we have that problem?
Well, I wrote to them this week.
Well, let me back up here a little bit, Pam, because I want to get it down to a little bit more specifics. Parking is not the purview of the EDC. Housing is not the purview of the EDC. An office space in each district is expensive. Somebody's got to pay the rent on those office spaces. Planning and vision with all of the government bodies. I look at Benton County, I look at Walla Walla, I look at Leavenworth, I look at Moses Lake, I look at Skagit. To be honest, I know a lot about the economic situation of Friday Harbor from a whale watching perspective. and what's going on the Spring Street, downtown Spring Street. It's an absolute disaster right now. They have lost more businesses in Friday Harbor than probably anywhere else in the state because of the pandemic. And so it's a serious issue up there right now. And to be honest, from some of my whale watch compatriots, they don't think much of the EDC and what the EDC has done. Kind of, and it's very actually emblematic of what we have here in that, yeah, they've done some work in terms of distributing PPP dollars, and that's nice. If you look on their website, which I'm looking at right here, that's pretty much all they're talking about is how you can get those dollars. But it, again, it's kind of like what I would be, say be careful of for all of us here. It isn't rocket science. We need to set some goals of what we want an economic development organization to do. Do we want it to bring in so many businesses a year and create so much employment? And working in concert with the county, how do we, you know, encourage a potential business owner to say, yeah, I'm going to move my 15 employees here and do this. How am I going to house them? And so that's the purview of the county to figure out how they're going to house those people. But I think, you know, kind of coming up with what the structure is of the EDC, the first thing I would consider is what's the goal of the EDC? What do we want to see them do? And I think that's kind of my frustration when I really put some thought to this over, you know, I kind of was really moved by that paper that they wrote, and it was really a lot more about what they've already been doing over the last 8 years that I've been a port commissioner. And it's like, do I really want to sit there and have them come and explain all the different programs they're doing that, you know, how much is that actually affecting the well-being of the county in terms of jobs and in terms of increasing the economic activity around Jefferson County? And to me, frankly, I think all the planning in the world doesn't do much unless you have those goals specified and you're reaching towards those goals to begin with. And then you plan around, how do I get to that milepost? So I just want to say, let's all be careful that we figure out how we're going to get those goals attached first before we talk about all the other stuff.
Thanks, Pete. I think that the San Juan County has realized that a focus on tourism was not the silver bullet and is easily fragile and broken. And so they have redirected their focus to skilled labor and the trade school. And they're seeing that can provide a better quality of life and keep folks there. In discussions with Aaron and Eric and some other folks, we need business succession planning tied. There's a business in town that, like the business guides, that do a fantastic job of succession planning. And if you have someone in an EDC position, they need to be able to know the businesses that are here and be able to be working 5 years before that business is going to retire. We've got so many innovative, creative people here, and when they retire, they can't just have somebody else step in or advertise to fill that position. They've got to have been working with somebody for a while. There's many businesses here that they don't want to, expand. They don't want to double their employees. There are others who do. So I think that an EDC director really needs to know who's here and what their plans are, and really be good at being a mentor, seeking volunteers in our community who are retired who would love to be able to be supportive of the businesses that are here. I think that keeping and retain every time we have a business that's closed or that retires and is not filled is a huge gap. And that so keeping businesses going that with that business succession plan and removing barriers so that businesses don't close because they're so far in debt because they've been encouraged to take so many loans. If we have an EDC that focuses on loans versus other ways of supporting businesses, that's what I've seen so far is this loan focus or debt focus, and we need to change that. And then we need to consider the resources that we have here and not destroying our resources in the process of growing. So that's
what I mean, there's at the staffing level that they have, my thought is that they could, there's only about two things they can do. One is that they can point people to resources. All this, the business planning, financial planning, succession planning, business recovery planning, all those things should be things that, they have a list of ready resources for that. The other thing that they should be doing is going outside the county and looking for compatible businesses that are in the market to relocate. And that's about all that you can ask of a one person EDC. I don't know where Kate lives, but I don't know a lot of people that can live on $35,000 a year. So if, you're going to say, well, I'm going to hire two more people and it's only going to cost me $70,000. I don't know where you're going to hire those people. I don't know where they're going to live.
If you're going to count the
employment benefits like health and insurance and all that overhead, that's insufficient.
Yeah, that 70,000 difference was a one and a half positions, which I feel like we should start, with Pete's question, why do we even need an EDC? Well, why don't we start out really small or keep it really small and get something that works, reduce the list, point to a couple of things that, what can our EDC do good at? What do we want them to do and have them do a couple things well before we add staff?
I don't know of a situation where adding tasks, doubling the number of tasks before you increase the staff ever works well.
Right.
Even if you say, well, I've never been in a business situation where saying, okay, go out and catch twice as many fish just on the staff that you currently have. And later on, when we can afford to add staff, we'll add staff. Do twice as many boats as you're doing now, but, or, fix twice as many airplanes or do anything, pick your task, teach twice as many students, do anything like that and say, well, we're gonna demand that you do these things, but we're not going to supply you with any resource to do them. But we're going to be very critical of you if you don't toe the line. You know, I'm all for asking people to do unreasonably aggressive things. But if you ask people to do those things, you need to give them the support to do them, and you can't be tentative about it.
So how's the opposite approach where you say, pick one thing you can do well at, show us you can do that.
Well, that's what they've been doing. They've been doing one thing well. They've been doing Port Townsend, Port Townsend hotels and restaurants. And I guess they've been doing it well. I don't know. I don't hear any complaints from those people. But, you know, is that it? Is that what an ADO for Jefferson County needs to focus on? I don't know. Doesn't sound like it to me. Sounds like we've been fighting this battle for, I don't know, Pete, how long you've been on the commission, how long I've been watching the commission. We fought this every year, every 2 years, since time immemorial. So we need to either decide to like do it or not do it. At this point, the only thing that comes out of this for me is if I told this to Heidi is that, you know, whatever the county wants to do, but the county's responsibility then is to, if the EDC says they're going to do this stuff, and if that stuff is okay, if that's all the county wants done, then the county's got to say, okay, you proposed this, do it, or we're going to take the ADO back. They've got to have some teeth in it. They can't just let it go on and on and on. I mean, that's kind of what we tried to do at the port. We said, here's a list of things, you know, do it or we're going to take your funding away. Well, apparently that wasn't a big enough threat.
Right.
Just quick comment. You know, the ADO, it isn't really the subject of whether or not you have the ADO. You know, for the money that you get for being the ADO, that doesn't really matter. I think the bigger question is if Google Alphabet shows up on our front door, are we going to turn that over to the EDC to figure out how to get them situated in the county, or are we going to do it ourselves? And I would propose we're going to do it ourselves. We're going to figure that out ourselves, and which is fine. And so I'm not saying that what Team Jefferson wants to do and what the county wants to do in terms of retaining the ADO and keeping it with Team Jefferson, that's great. I think the bigger question, and you know, to be honest, Bill is right. I mean, Brad, Commissioner Kleinfelter was on this 8 years ago because of the same, really saying the exact same things you are, Pam, of, well, okay, we'll give this a year, we'll give this 2 years, we'll see what they do. And again, the problem is there's no set goal here. It's just trying to maintain and do certain things in the community. And so I think we as a body have to decide, okay, are we for those things that they're doing? And if we are, that's great. If we aren't, then, you know, why put our resources into what they're doing? Let them do it. I'm not against what they're doing, but I'd certainly rather take the $30,000 and put it into promoting the port to, you know, other areas in the state as a place to bring a business, and let us do some of that work if we're really interested in bringing other businesses into the county. And we might be more effective at it than what the vision of the Team Jefferson is, which is a vision that is also really helpful and legitimate in terms of helping small businesses retain their business and retain, you know, keep people employed. So that's just as legitimate. I'm not arguing that. I'm just saying, in the end, I think we have to decide what's the goal for the port? What's the best use of port tax dollars, public resources, in terms of our mandate as a special purpose district?
I wonder if I could offer 2 cents from my seat. Couple of comments. One, I think timing is really important on this as we continue to come together with other governmental partners, with the ICG. As I imagine the EDC's work, particularly for 2021, I see them primarily focused on supporting and staffing the work of the ICG as it develops the economic framework. I imagine that they will invest quite a few hours in, you know, this continued kind of COVID recovery funding piece of the puzzle. And particularly if we move forward with a new position, as well as a new board structure, I would hope that the getting to know piece would be a primary part of 2021. So a newly born EDC, as it's staffing for framework purposes, also getting to know the business community. You know, whether that's the old fashioned door to door, you know, or some survey work or a combination of both. I think it is a really legitimate request that the EDC fundamentally understand who's here, what they need to survive and thrive. And that gets then to the compatibility question about potential recruitment in the future. And I think it would be super helpful. Timing wise, it seems to me that we need to be prepared to be part of this in 2021. We're talking about potentially, you know, a $15,000 expenditure for the second half of 2021, assuming we run a biennial contract as part of the five-party agreement. I think it would be tough for us to be on the bus with Gus here and not start till 6 months after everybody else starts. I also think this is a crucial bit of timing for EDC to be working in line with everybody when the ICG works. Then a whole bunch of what the three of you have talked about today, it seems to me, will be very much the focus of the ICG's work. So I do anticipate housing, for example, will be an element of an economic development framework. You know, educational opportunities may well be as well. I don't know, it's the first I've heard that one come up. But, you know, these issues will be raised, and then that ability to shift going into 2022 to match the need with the plan, I think makes a lot of sense. And whether the port wants to fill in gaps differently from what's happening there is an entirely separate question in my mind. But I do see, I think, significant value in us being partnered with our sister entities at the same pledge level, if you will, and the same timing, and then recognizing that, you know, that can step up or down, and we'll each have our own independent way to step aside if we don't think it's working. So board structure, you know, no problem. I'm sure that there's room to adjust that, whether it's, you know, four government plus three business, or maybe it's four government plus six business, and together they pick a chair, which would give you 11 members. You know, I think those are topics for discussion. The message I would take back is really we see a desire to have both geographic and sector diversity, and we don't want it to be too big that it's unwieldy. I'll talk with the other administrators about their thoughts about the public sector cabinet. I think the original imagination was that the four entities would appoint somebody to be on the board who may or may not be the administrator. And therefore, the public sector cabinet provided kind of a higher level opportunity to integrate the four governments with the work of the EDC. In my imagination, I see that as a place where you know, we could be party to non-disclosure agreements and potentially have you know, potential business contacts discussed in more detail there. So that would be an opportunity for, you know, Philip to hear about what's going on directly and then tie that potential business to county planning, for example, and just another way to integrate the governmental function with the EDC work. Not trying to replace the board, though, with the board really strategically focused on direction. This would be more the kind of nuts and bolts of how do the entities come together. On the other hand, you know, it could be the administrators, although that's not something that, you know, I've heard a lot of excitement about, I don't think.
Can I throw something out there, Aaron?
Yeah, of course.
You might consider making the four representatives that are already on the board that are from the four entities into a committee, a subcommittee that, you know, if there was a, again, a Google Alphabet that showed up on the horizon, those representatives can brief their respective directors because you are all still meeting in your Thursday lunch or whatever it is. And so that could certainly be discussed at that point. Hey, did you hear from such and such about this? It just saves another, I'm just trying to save another meeting and another layer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, they could function like a technical committee, really, is how I would think of it. But
so there's two aspects of the governmental involvement in the EDC. One is oversight and governance. And the other is that, you know, if you have a project like a Google Alphabet come to town, you know, they may be looking for land, which may be something that the port might have. They may be looking for zoning variances and permitting, which could be the city or the county. They could be looking for infrastructure, which could be PUD. So, you know, in addition to the governance side of this, sitting down at a table with Google Alphabet and saying, you know, there's this piece of property that the port can acquire that needs some reclamation, but we have a way to do that because we've got that capability. It doesn't have power and fire flow right now, but the PUD can plan that in, and you know, there's somebody from the PUD here that can speak to that. It's going to require a conditional use permit, or it's going to require some zoning changes, and that's something that our city or county rep can talk to. So, you know, to get an economic development project across the finish line, to not send somebody away screaming how bad it is to deal with trying to get something done in Jefferson County, you not only need to have somebody to kind of like watch how the money is spent, but you need to have a group of people that are actively engaged in actually getting it done. And I don't know, I mean, Aaron, from your experience in Skagit County, I mean, it sounds to me like that's what had to happen. You had to have people from the city and the county and the other agencies, you know, kind of pitch in to do it. I don't know that we've ever approached that kind of thing here. Part of the reason why, you know, people have the idea that Jefferson County is a place where business ideas come to die is just because the agencies don't work to see the value in economic development and don't work to see it fostered.
My sense is that there may be a community expectation that the hurdles are higher here than other places, or maybe stated differently, there are other communities that are more hungry for job creation than this one. And So that gets to the getting to know the community. That's where that framework is so important. If my sense is accurate and the community is making a mindful decision to make it difficult to develop, then my suggestion would be is that we clearly articulate what that looks like and why. So at least we're not frustrating people. So it's essentially, if you want to do this here, then it's going to take you 18 months. You're going to have, 12 public hearings and 82 public process meetings, at the end of which you have a 10% chance of success. But if it happens, it'll be good. And that way, and I'm being a little facetious, but I mean, my point is there are other places where they will have done pre-planning to the point where somebody could show up and essentially SEPA is done on a development that hasn't yet been thought of, but it would be consistent with a master planning effort. That is not what I see here. And part of the frustration that is being expressed is that people don't know when they come here that they're getting a different level of service or a different level of community expectation. So, to me, the economic development entity, when it knows that, can talk about it. And maybe that's super important too, is if you're Google Alphabet and you want to come here, here's what that process might look like, as opposed to, well, we've never done that before and we're not sure about it anyway. Different answer.
Yeah.
That's why I would, have we ever as four entities worked together with oversight on economic development? Have we ever tried this before? I know the port has worked really hard on this, and probably entities by themselves have.
The port's never worked on this.
Okay. Well, that's value. What Aaron just said about, and Bill, what you just said about creating this common ground that we all are pulling together to attract and make it work for the businesses here, for other businesses, that's where this communication piece, I feel, is super valuable for us to try for 2 years and then be done.
Yeah, I'll add Aaron's comments of, I think a lot of times we feel like Jefferson County is a hot product for businesses because it's beautiful, and it's like, there are a lot of places that are beautiful. And I just came from North Carolina. Gas is $2.60 a gallon in North Carolina. Filled up last night at the airport, it was $4 a gallon. So, there's a lot of competition out there. I don't even know that as a community, we really even want to advertise that we're open for businesses to move here. I mean, there's a lot of discussion about that, and it's legitimate discussion. So I just think if we want some sort of business to move here, we really have to be, like you say, Pam, all the entities have to work together in communication to do that. And, it is a beautiful spot, and there is a lot of reasons why you should move here to build a business or work for a business. But I think we really have to make that choice that we're going to actively go out and market that as something that we want to see happen. So,
yeah, my concern is for balance. We're quickly becoming a retirement, a countywide retirement community.
Yep.
With reduced tax capability, the city is like forgiving people's taxes for this and that. The county has special deals for people who can't afford it, and I just am concerned that at some point the whole thing just dissolves. If we don't have some more diversity of employment, if we don't have more people that are working and contributing directly to the economy, You know, otherwise we're depending on people who get a $2,000 check, you know, a month from Social Security. Not saying those are bad people. I'm one of them, but you know, maybe we need a little more working people in this community than that.
That's why I'd like that education piece to be there. I mean, I have three children in their 20s. Mm-hmm. I know what their challenges are.
Do they all want to build wooden boats?
Do you know what it costs to go to boat school?
Oh, I know. I mean, you can say, you know, we've got wood schools, we've got boat schools, we've got this schools and that schools. And I wanted to just take a little basic carpentry class. So I went out to the wood school out at Fort Worden. I can't afford, you know, $20,000 a year for, you know, to take a hobby, for me, a hobby. Somebody who's, you know, coming out of high school, you know, where are they going to find $20,000 to become a craftsman? And, you know, and I think that, you know, Betsy's got this all dialed in, I suppose. I don't know. I think a lot of businesses maybe are sending their people to the system school and they're paying for it out of the business funds. But, you know, I don't know, where the kids that go to the wooden boat school to learn how to build wooden boats that are, you know, just came out of high school, how they fund that.
Well, that's a missing piece that is being requested.
Well, it's not coming out of our $35,000 or $15,000 or whatever we give to the EDC. I don't know. That's off topic, I think, probably, but.
Are we nailing the EDC discussion, and do we want to move into this broader roundtable discussion? And I don't quite know what was in mind for the roundtable discussion, Aaron.
Well, I want to make sure on the EDC that, you know, you are comfortable that, you know, the next step here is really starting to negotiate a five-party agreement that will include the port contributing funding and will include, you know, objectives, kind of measurable objectives. So I've got some notes that I've taken from what the three of you have said, some of which seem like they would be good fits for measurable objectives. Some I see as future discussion points for the plan, the framework. But, you know, really that's what I'm looking for is comfort that, you know, I can work with the other administrators and with EDC Team Jefferson on kind of the next step, which is starting to draft a document.
Yeah. You know, Pam, I know, you're concerned that this item isn't on the budget, but, you know, I don't think that, you know, if we want to have a seat at the table, we have to contribute something. Maybe right. It's in kind, maybe it's housing for the organization. Maybe it's funding. I don't know. We need to contribute. We need to figure out what we're contributing if we want to have the privilege of, you know, being at the table.
I agree. I have a plan for the roundtable discussion for how we can come up with funding.
Ah, good.
So Aaron,
involve a printing press?
So, Aaron, if you're looking for, I mean, if we were voting, I would vote no, to be honest, but we're not voting. So, I myself, personally, I have not seen enough difference that I would support continuing on this path, but I am one of three.
I am willing to pay for the opportunity to work with my fellow organizations. And that's the way, because I completely agree with you, Pete, but beyond the EDC, it's more important for me and us to work together as a for jurisdictions. So that's
what I think. Yeah, and I agree with that, Pam. I think I think that's a worthy goal. So you're
to the extent that we've got this IGC and started, that has been such a painful birthing process. That is something that's kind of been on my list of things I wanted to get done in my lifetime. That now that it's going to kind of start stepping back piecemeal from participation is just sounds hazardous to me. So, I understand, Pete, that I understand the frustration. You know, I understood the frustration when it was Brad sitting in this chair. I've been frustrated similarly. My only hope is that the county who actually makes the designation for the ADO sounds like they're going to put some teeth in it. If they do that, maybe in a year the port will be the ADO. Or the EDC will perform. I'm happy with either one of those.
Yep.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Pete.
And kabam.
Yeah.
I know.
Well, the second question you asked, Pete, which is kind of what's the plan for the roundtable, I think this is the second time this has popped up on your agenda. It's really wide open, intended to allow each of you a few minutes to, get a topic on the table that wasn't otherwise on the table. So it's really an open forum for the three of you to talk about issues that you want to talk about.
2 minute break.
Okay. Boy, I miss WPPA meetings. You know, what? When I'm at them, I'm not sure I fully appreciate them. Now that I haven't been to one for well over a year,
yeah,
it is to kind of sit someplace and have coffee and just connect is worth all the pain and suffering of having to go to them.
About a comment about getting back into open public meetings.
Okay.
Hey, that'd be a good topic to bring up on the round table. I can offer you the latest I know about that. I think it'd be good for Pam to hear that too.
Okay. I'll wait.
And you need to go and contract to get some 3-foot diameter plexiglass tubes and put them in the I don't know. We don't have if you wanted to maintain social spacing, if that was a thing, I don't know that we have a venue in this county that capable of it. I mean, I'm pretty happy. I've got my two shots, but.
I'm going to get my second.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what percentage of the staff is, I think, Abigail has had her two by now. I don't know. Karen, have you Have you had yours to have, right? First one.
Just the one, yeah.
You need two, you know.
Yeah. Well, the other one's not scheduled till April 26th.
Okay.
Well, I went for the one-shot wonder, so now I'm just waiting for the blood clot to form.
Oh.
If you're one in a million, it's supposed to be literally one in a million.
You have a better chance of being struck by lightning than having a blood clot, but hey.
Nevertheless, not so reassuring to get a shot and a few days later have them say, you know,
Oh, by the way,
we're going to hold up on that Johnson Johnson there. Yeah.
Anyway, Pam, what we're talking about here is reopening open public meetings. And, is that an option, Aaron? I mean, the governor has allowed it or mandated that we not have them?
Well, no, the governor has allowed it, and there are public meetings happening all over the place across the state. Jefferson County's a little different in that Dr. Locke has an order in place from nearly a year ago prohibiting governmental meetings. The county has developed a draft proposal for them to start getting back into business. The city opened City Hall on Monday of this week to in-person work, and they're working on their plan for how they might meet. I had Seth take a look at this issue, and he talked to the county's civil deputy about it. I think there's maybe a little bit of concern about, an order that would prohibit governmental meetings when all sorts of other indoor meetings are fine, i.e., movie theaters, weddings, really anything you want, as long as you're following the phase three capacity limitations. The only hiccup with doing a public meeting, for example, in the other counties that don't have a local order, is that if more people show up than you can accommodate, then the meeting must be postponed to another date. So different than prior.
We don't have that limitation on, if the fire marshal says this room can only hold 100 people and 102 people show up, we don't have a limitation that says, no, we got to reschedule because 102 people showed up.
No, that's a COVID restriction. So that's a special, I think that must be part of the governor's order. So essentially, if you wanted to meet and Dr. Locke had relaxed his order, which I understand he may be considering right now to leave it up to individual governmental entities, for example, the three of you to decide whether to meet in person or not. Then, let's say we meet at the yacht club and the capacity is 50. Phase three, I think we're allowed to have 25 people. You have a check-in station, a sign-in sheet for contact tracing, masks required. But let's say 26 people show up. Under this scenario, the meeting would have to be continued to another date, even if you're simulcasting it on Zoom.
So I don't understand. I don't understand how that works.
I mean,
if a meeting space has a capacity limitation, it has a capacity limitation. I don't care if the fire marshal or the county health officer or whomever, the governor. Why does that change the open public meeting rules?
Yeah, well, that may be a better question for Seth. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me either. I think the theory behind it, though, is because the space is now 50 or 25% of normal capacity, that may be the logic, is that it's just such a smaller room. But I agree.
Come early.
I've been to meetings in the past where we had more people show up, and they were standing outside, couldn't come in. Meetings still happened. Should have gotten there earlier was probably the message. But that's not the case. And so that's why I highlight that. That would be the one downside of meeting in person. The county is looking at a potential scenario where they would have their commission and staff meet in person, but the public would only be able to join by Zoom. I would say that is not a recommendation I would bring to the three of you. Having been an elected official a few times now, I just feel like that would be a highly uncomfortable scenario where we're all meeting in person, but the community, the voters and taxpayers are somehow not able to actually be there to witness the sausage being made. But they're thinking because of the size of their county commission chambers, that there's an advantage to getting people again meeting together, but that there's not enough room to bring the public in. So that's what they're considering, is something like that.
I mean, we could put a circus tent out at the airport.
Can I talk?
Sure.
What, Aaron, why, what's holding us from bringing this up on the agenda and voting on this?
Voting on whether to meet or not?
Yeah.
Well, I think what would be holding us up is that Dr. Locke currently has an official health official's order prohibiting that. So that.
But I don't. I think what Seth determined that that's not legitimate. I mean, if it's not legitimate, then why are we doing that? Why are we adhering to that?
No, I think what Seth has determined is that more research would be necessary to figure out if there's a legal argument as to legitimacy or not. But that it would squarely put us in, a position of conflict with the county. So I think the suggestion would be if the three of you are ready to meet, consistent with the governor's phase three guidance, a motion to, direct me to send a letter to Dr. Locke requesting that he modify his order so we can get back to business. To me, that would be probably the recommended next step, which is, let's try to work through the official channels before we end up in a position of conflict, but really signaling, hey, we're ready. Governor's allowing it. All sorts of other meetings are authorized now. There's not a lot of logic behind this one anymore, as there may have been a year ago. So please reconsider your position so we can get back to meeting.
So can I make a motion on that at the opening of the meeting to change the agenda for that?
Yeah, you could bring that up at the meeting under commissioner comments, or you could add it as an agenda item. Either scenario would work.
Okay. I think maybe it would be a good idea to say, figure out logistically how you would do that. So, figure out what the venue is, figure out what the capacity would be at the governor's current allowed capacity. And then, propose that to Dr. Locke.
Well, so I personally wouldn't propose anything in particular other than, I think the request would be to rescind his health officer's order and allow the governor's order to be the law of the land, and the individual entity would choose how it wants to respond. And then we would come back to you with a proposal for how you might like to do this, whether it's the yacht club or the Maritime Center or some other location where there's room. That's when we dig in and figure out, all right, what's the capacity? How many people? How would we ensure the technology works? And we probably need there'd be a little bit of time between those two events happening before we would be, I think, confident we could get a meeting up and probably also keep it on Zoom. So a bit of work between those two steps.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how I feel about that yet. Letting you know.
Okay. That's fine.
I'm not opposed. I'm not for. This is kind of the first I've heard of this, and I always like to take time to think about it.
I mentioned it a while ago just from the standpoint that, we're all comfortable going to a grocery store masked up and putting and washing our hands and doing what we need to do. Or we have schools that are open now, or we have to go to doctor's appointments. And so it just seems a little odd that not so much for a meeting. I was more concerned about our City Hall or the port admin building or the county admin. It just seems really inefficient to try and conduct business and be closed all the time. That's crazy. So,
on that piece of the puzzle, I'll just let you know we're meeting tomorrow at the staff level to talk about the kind of a reopening plan and how how we would imagine opening our admin building and whether we'd want to reopen mortgage offices, if so, how that would look. So we're working on that kind of independent. I guess I imagine really the discussion for the three of you is more related to whether you would want to meet in person or not for commission meetings. I think I recognize with the city and county, you know, moving to reopen the city this week, county, I think, is proposing May 1st that, you know, the time is coming where people are going to expect to show up at a door and not have it locked with a sign saying, call this number. Our mortgage offices may be a little different given their size. So that's partly where I wanted to start with a good discussion with staff about how they feel about their safety. And, it may be different in different buildings for how we would propose to roll out reopening and welcoming the community back into port offices. Yeah.
Well, Key City has a sign outside that says, Key City and the Waterfront Pizza, the two organizations that I think are the hallmark for business in Jefferson County, have signs outside their door that says, you know, one person at a time. So they've got their staff that, you know, kind of works in that space, but they also have signs that say one person at a time. So those businesses have, you know, if they have 10 square feet of space for clients, that's probably about the limit. So they limit the number of people in the door.
On the roundtable discussion, Aaron, one of the things I would kind of like to see is, and I think we've mentioned this in the past, I think we need to get an update every commission meeting about Point Hudson. What's going on? What is the state of, you know, who's talking to who and why? And so we can get a sense as a commission in terms of timing and, you know, there's a lot of moving wheels there and it's such a big project. I think it would be good for us to be, and maybe you're going to say it'd be better if we did it one-on-one, and that's fine too. So I don't feel like I have a very good handle on what's going on with Point Hudson.
I think we can do that both ways. I've asked Mike to provide a report under staff reports. Just as part of his report, ongoing would be a Point Hudson update. And, my guess is that's going to be not super detailed, but general, but certainly intended to keep the three of you and everybody else in the loop. And then anytime there are any specific questions, always happy to do that one-on-one. But there's no reason I can think of why we wouldn't provide at least the latest report, about what's going on. Via Mike's report at the regular business meeting. So I'm expecting you'll get that this afternoon.
Yeah, maybe a big thermometer that says we're this far through with funding and we're this far through with permitting. I mean, those are the two things that seem to me to be the gating items to anything else that goes on.
Well, I know Ross will be here tomorrow, continuing to work on the permitting piece. It feels like not necessarily a linear path, permitting. Mm-hmm. So we'll certainly learn more tomorrow. Talked to him a couple times last week as we're kind of moving through the process. It sounds like the kind of primary person at NOAA NIMFS is moving to a new job as a chief advisor to the U.S. Senate here in a couple weeks. Not sure how that's going to affect our permitting, but, you know, he's working on that question right now. We know funding-wise, I'm going to give you the high view right now, the funding-wise, we're not able to secure the federal dollars in the form of a agreement until we get more permitting done. So there's no news there. It's a bit of a do loop, mm-hmm. but you know, we're working through that. And then, of course, most recently, we asked the legislature, we asked Representative Theringer to prioritize our boatyard stormwater situation as, DEFCON 5, 3 alarm red alert here for this session, and said if we need to, we'd come back next year to talk about Point Hudson. But we think we need to do boatyard stormwater in the coming months. Point Hudson's not going to get built in 2021. So we've got time to come and talk about that next time. So I don't know what will happen there. It's kind of a nerve-wracking time, and that the, you know, the House and Senate have both passed their capital budgets and they're involved in the conference right now. So this is the part where all sorts of action happens and we'll see what pops out. But yeah, big picture. I've heard that from you, Pete, and also from Pam. And I've talked to Mike about making sure that's a recurring item to report out on.
Yeah. I mean, I see this kind of Gordian knot that is, well, we don't know how long permitting's going to take, because nobody will commit to a time frame for that. And, we won't do, the financing until the permitting is done. And then hopefully the financing will happen before the permitting expires. You know?
Yeah, no, it's a complicated project.
Not a great way to run a railroad.
I do think that the funding will be there, you know, within the permit time window. But yeah, there's just nothing at all easy. And at some point in the not too distant future, we're going to need to start talking about some means and methods, schedule and timing related to Point Hudson, specifically as it relates to the operation of vessels in the marina, whether the marina is going to be open at all, whether we're going to aim for a single season solution or a two season solution, and how all of that would affect the Wooden Boat Festival. So there are, I see a whole range of difficult decisions ahead, all of them with, you know, really bad choices. And I think what I've shared with you kind of one-on-one is the nearest kind of analog in my mind is this is a downtown Main Street reconstruction project.
Yep.
And it will be, every bit of it, once we start, will be bad for everybody involved until it's over, and then it will all be really good. But there is,
that's where our biggest critics are going to come from. And that's a group of people that have the most to win from having it done. So, you know, they've got that cross to bear, and I'm willing to let them bear it.
Okay. Their biggest project. I have some things for the round table if we can move on. One is, I mentioned that a funding source. I would really like to see our port think about bank charges and allocating those to the users rather than taking the hit themselves, because it's costing us over $100,000 a year, which is $1 million in 10 years. So just would like to look at that as part of our short-term relief, or maybe that's a budget thing. Another thing I wanted to see if we could get on our next workshop agenda, a couple of things. One is quilsing and planning for that. I'm excited that Jeannie is starting. Eric and Jeannie and Patricia Jones and I walked around quilsing last week, just kind of talking about ideas about engaging the community for discussion. And then this next, I know that the North Hood Canal Chambers wants to be able to have the port talk to the community when we're ready. I wanted to see if at our next workshop that we could talk about whales and salmon. And there's with Representative Simpson's a dam proposal, and you know, with wanting to look at alternative ways to, you know, the pros and cons of removing the dams. I have talked to several port commissioners from other ports who would like to explore weighing in on that. And we had an initial discussion this past week, and I think we're going to open that up to talking with other interested port commissioners to join in and have a presentation, I know, by an organization called Save Our Wild Salmon or Save Our Salmon, something like that. Just on the pros and cons of dam removal and having ports weigh in on that.
Can I make a comment on that, Pam?
Sure, Pete. Yes. And have you been engaged in any of this conversation?
Well, I'm really against dam removal. It's a federal issue. Okay. It's not a local issue. So it seems to me, the issues around dam removal are, one, the infrastructure is so great in terms of what it provides in power, and also how much pollution it saves from tire wear, carbon emissions wear, to move the wheat that is moved down the Snake River Dam system to the coast, to Portland, where it's shipped out. It's astronomical in terms of trying to do that with a truck or a train. And so, if there was going to be, and I know WPPA has taken a very neutral stance on it because all of the ports that are around the agricultural ports obviously are very against it. And, no one has yet said, how are you going to move that wheat? How are you going to move those produce through the river system if you don't have the river system? So I think that's a pretty big nut to talk about. And the other one is, from a whale perspective, just from what I have learned over the years, it's really a Salish Sea issue in terms of shoreline encumbrance and fishing. And I think there are a lot of really difficult decisions that are going to have to come down the line in terms of hatchery fish versus native fish, native fishing, in terms of practices that are currently in place that are pretty destructive to the fish population. And so I think there's a sense from everybody in the know that we really have to have a discussion about how to prioritize getting the fish into the Salish Sea. If we're talking about just the southern resident killer whales, which really are the only whales affected by the salmon situation.
Well, maybe we could have a discussion on might be a great focus for bringing,
sure.
And how can our ports that are surrounding the Salish Sea better the Salish Sea?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Great question.
I like to try and look at issues more than one dimensionally. If you say, well, the dams kill so many salmon, what would acidification of the ocean do to more pollution? How many salmon would that kill? You know, there is science available. And so to take a kind of a one dimensional, look at things and saying, well, it's, you know, this is bad. That's a sort of a selective argument to make your point rather than, you know, basing it on the totality of what an impact is. If you're worried about impacts, I mean, the unintended consequences, that take place because people didn't take the time to actually look at all the consequences. You know, I don't want to make something, I don't want to make a bad situation worse. I'd like to make a bad situation better, but I don't want to make it worse.
But Pam, I applaud your, you know, Port of Seattle's been pretty proactive on the Salish Sea issue and how can the Port of Seattle better that. And that's a great, yeah, I think it's great.
Okay. Well, Yeah, maybe you can share with Aaron, maybe a go-to person where we can start more of a port sharing session with our Salish seaports. Another thing on my roundtable question, so I've got bank charges, whales and
can I bring up one more thing? Sure. Yes, Jacques White is the director of Long Live the Kings.
Okay.
You should look up Long Live the Kings.
Sounds good.
And they are the preeminent NGO on salmon restoration in the Salish Sea.
Excellent. Thank you.
And he would be happy to come and do, Sarah is on the board, and he would be happy to come and do a presentation at a workshop.
Okay.
Talk about local issues. Like one of the biggest issues right now that is in the Salem that they recognize is the Hood Canal Bridge and how much of a barrier it is. You probably have heard that.
Right.
To salmon, little, you know, whatever, salmonoids or whatever you call them. Yeah. So.
Well, I'd be happy to get him at a workshop.
Okay.
As soon as possible. Another thing on my round table is the Gardner boat ramp. We received a commission, our commission received a letter about, from someone who's concerned about drug issues and speeding and problems in the Gardner area surrounding the boat ramp. So I'm just wondering about reaching out to Sheriff Knoll and asking him what's going on. They're concerned that if we better our boat ramp, that it will bring more people, but I'm not sure. So I just wanted us to be able to explore taking care of these concerns.
Yeah, I read that letter too, and I wonder, you know, I don't know. We're talking about what the condition of a port facility is. Is it usable? Is it dangerous? That's you know, one layer of thing. You know, are we going to make it so attractive that just thousands and thousands more people show up at the Gardner boat ramp? I can't imagine that's going to happen. So you know. I don't know how we solve this individual's issue with policing, which seemed to be the at the crux of their concern. And I don't know how they correlate that directly with maintaining the port facility there. I mean, it's not like it's going to go away if we don't spend money, except that it's going to become more and more dangerous to use and less and less useful to the people that are using it, but
yeah, that's good points, Bill. Let's see. Another thing on my roundtable is parking, and the contribution of our tires to our stormwater problem. So, just like for our port to explore our parking issue in regards to land value and in regards to stormwater.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. So long as ecology is going to make city streets, you know, okay to run off as much garbage as they run off, and the streets within the boatyard be held to the same ridiculous standards as the boatyard is held to. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're kind of posed, but I don't understand. I don't understand how Seamarine is doing what they're doing. It sounds like they have somehow managed to have a ditch that all of their stormwater will fit in. And I can't imagine that area perks any better than than Boat Haven does. So it seems like there's either some sleight of hand going on here or some technology that we ought to be taking advantage of that we're not.
They actually go into the city sewer system. They discharge to the city.
Hey, that sounds like a great idea. Let's do that.
Yeah. Can do that?
Not the yard stormwater, though. The yard stormwater discharges into the ditch that runs along on Jackson Street there, the gravel part of Jackson. And my understanding is it theoretically infiltrates. And so we are continuing to meet with Seamarine about, potential lease expansion. And on our list is to fully understand their stormwater permit and any long tail environmental liability the port might have, and just really understanding how that works. So, it's an infiltration model. So like us, the washdown water, would be discharged, I think, into sewer, although I don't know for sure for them, ours is. But the runoff off of the yard goes into the ditch. And that's where they take their samples too, by the way.
Does the ditch go?
Well, I noticed there's a pump station at the end of the ditch, and I don't really understand how that system works. So I don't know the answer.
I mean, I would think that no matter what happens, if you had a really substantial storm event, the ditch would get full.
Right. Yeah, we'll learn more about that, be able to share that information. But that's why their limits are different than ours, is because they're not directly discharging into the waters of the state.
I still think we had to pump all the water, storm water, into the Kaitai.
So we're coming up on 11:30. Are we pretty much there? Ready to wrap up? Meet at 1?
I'm done. Pam, you got more?
One quick little thing. Just looking at our lease policy, taking another look at it, we passed it a year ago. I think we should look at it at a workshop and see how it's going. I've just gotten too many people, tenants questioning what's going on. There's a level of uncertainty in leasing that is coming up again and again, far and wide. And I would like to be able to just say, okay, what in our lease, how can we make our lease policy, what works well and what needs to be more certain for our tenants?
No, but I would just say, Pam, that's fine. I think bringing it up at a port workshop is fine. But, make sure that the people that are complaining about the lease policy are people that don't want to pay the full rate. And, I think we've put a lot of effort into the lease policy. And and I think we're working really hard at being consistent with the lease policy. So I just, if it costs a dollar, it costs a dollar. Just, it's the way it is. So.
Yeah, and the other thing is, I get a lot of, well, how come their rate is different than my rate? And I think we're working very diligently at trying to have a single rate. We have policies in place to do that, and we're working hard to do it. And Sue is having that position that Sue fills, is really, pushing us in that direction. So to say, either you're saying that, the rate is too high, that's an issue, or we're saying that, my rate is different than their rate, why isn't my rate like their rate? And if their rate is on a contract that was made, decades ago, there's not much we can do unilaterally about abrogating a contract.
Yeah,
so
I would like the discussion to go beyond rates and just take a look generally.
Okay.
Well, is the bank charge issue something that the commission would want to see staffed up prior to, say, an end of the year kind of budget rate discussion. I mean, I think that could happen anytime. It's essentially a policy shift to add bank charges as a separate item, but it's a pretty significant shift from our current practice. So I'm just asking a question about, is this something you want to discuss more, or is this something you'd like to see work done on, how it could look, and if so, what's the timing?
I mean, I, as kind of a personal issue, I don't like to see, as a consumer, I don't like to see those things broken out. And my inclination as a consumer is to not deal with somebody who wants to charge me an extra fee, because it just muddies the water about, you know, what it is I'm buying and what it is I'm paying for. Saying, well, you know, it's going to cost us $100,000. Okay, but our consumer's going to demand $100,000 discount to make us comparable with other competitors in the market. I mean, are we going to play both sides of this argument or just one?
I'm sorry, Pete.
Well, I was just going to say, rather than get into the argument, why don't we just decide, yes, let's tool something up and we can have a discussion on it at some point.
That sounds good, Pete. Thanks.
Does that sound good?
Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes.
I'll add that to the list of future topics then as well. I mean,
I just wanted to broaden it conceptually, not argue it here.
Cool.
It's been 3 whole weeks since we've had a meeting. I hope that felt really good to have an extra week.
Yeah.
You're good. So.
All right. See everybody at 1:00.